When you own real estate, man, you keep it. Don't ever sell real estate. Just leverage it. Borrow against it. Keep the real estate, for crying out loud. And it doesn't matter so much when you bought it because it's going
to
go up.
Welcome to Truly Passive Income. I'm Neil Henderson.
And I'm Clint Harris.
Well, Gary Wilson, welcome, sir. It's great to finally get to connect with you. We've had some tech difficulties that have kept us apart, but it's glad to be finally chatting with you. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you very much, guys. Clint and Neil, and I really appreciate the opportunity be here today, help your folks, and serve your community.
Great. Thanks, Gary. Listen, I'm staring at two pages of accolades of things that you've done in your career. You retired at 40 from national banking. Besides being an eight-time author, and I want to hear more about that and about your books, you've bought and sold a tremendous amount of real estate properties in a fairly short period of time. You've been different rental units, multifamily, a lot of coaching and helping other agents as well. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey, and what you're up to these days.
Sure. Well, really, it all started way back when I was a kid. My parents had unfortunately separated. My dad was in the Army. He was in Korea and Vietnam. And in fact, I was born in Germany. And he was very interesting. In hindsight, now we all know the reason he didn't wear a uniform in Germany is because he was basically undercover. You know, we didn't know that until just a few years ago. But what happened is when I was 8 years old, after my parents broke up, we started spending more time with our grandparents. And my paternal grandfather was a retired professor. He was born in 1901. And back in the days when he was a professor, they taught multiple subjects, one of which was architecture. So he saw me drawing with ruler and pencil and paper pictures of houses that I was intrigued by. I would like to live in these houses. And I would draw pictures of them. Well, he showed me how to do the floor plans. I mean, literally all the scaling, the symbols, the whole nine yards. So I'm cranking out floor plans as an eight-year-old. And fast forward, I thought, well, I'm going to go to Virginia Tech School of Architecture. Well, I didn't do that. Ended up going to Old Dominion University down in Tidewater, Virginia, right where the Chesapeake Bay meets the Atlantic Ocean. And my first year college roommate named Socrates, his dad was a Greek immigrant and was a big investor in Richmond, Virginia. When Sock and I graduated, his dad told us, you're not going to rent. You're going to buy a home, and you're going to buy a home that you can make money on. And of course, I'm like, yeah, sign me up for that, you know. So this was 1986 when interest rates were still north of 10%, probably 11 to 13%. So we assumed the owner's first mortgage. We refinanced his second. And then we gave him a third note for the remaining equity. So we literally had three mortgages on this property. And the other two guys we rented to, the other two bedrooms, paid all of our outgoing expenses except for about $50 a month. So that was my first experience, thanks to Sock and his dad. And I remember, really important, when we went to celebrate down in Nags Head, the Outer Banks in North Carolina, at one of his beach houses, and he's sitting there pounding his chest on the deck saying, if you boys do what I tell you to do, you won't have to work for anybody else when you're 35 years old. We didn't listen. We went out and bought a boat, and then we bought a van to pull the boat, and we were just having a blast. You know, two young guys with their own house, making money and living the life. I'm going to pause here in a second, but what happened is 10 years had gone by. And I got married, had kids, and I moved to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in the corporate world and was not liking the corporate world. I mean, I was not born to be sitting behind a desk in a cube in an office somewhere in a tall 40-story building. So that's when I really started investing. And I'll do a quick pause here and let you guys kind of catch up and see if there's anything you want to unpack before I jump into the investing part, you know?
So a house hack in 1986, I think that's a record for this podcast. We have a lot of people who have found ways to offset their living expense. My first house in my early 20s was a duplex, and I did a house hack there. I didn't even know the term house hacking until years later. And then when I moved to the beach, we bought a duplex, same thing. You're currently living in a house hack here at the beach, and you lived in one previously in Vegas. So that's near and dear to our heart, but 1986 is a new record. Isn't it so funny how a lot of times, ultimately, as people grow up and mature and kind of we make our own decisions, one way or another, oftentimes we end up, like you did in Pennsylvania, in a career where you're trading time for money. But the thing I think for you is that you had a little taste early on of what it's like to not pay rent and to not be trading your time for money, right? When I experienced that in my early to mid-20s, that's something that never got away from me. If you've ever lived in a situation where you've not had to pay a mortgage, it's really hard to go backwards later in life. So that sounds like it was a very formative interaction that you had with Sock and his dad. Sounds like a great man. I'm excited to hear what happens next. Neil, any questions about that? Keep going. Let us know. So next thing you know, you wake up, you're 35, but you've got a lesson that you haven't forgotten for the last 10 years or more. Keep going.
a Sox dad had sadly passed away. And so I felt like I want to invest. I want to be financially free, right? So what I did is I got the Carlton Sheets program. I think I had two of them actually at one point. I think I forgot about the first one. But in any case, I studied his program and I didn't have a mentor at the time. They had a mentorship program, but I'm Mr. Frugal and I didn't want to pay for a coach. So what I did is went out using what Sox dad had taught me and using what I learned from Carlton Sheets. Carlton Sheets has since passed away too. And he now gives this information away for free through a distributor in Chicago. I forget the Education Institute, I think is what it's called. So at that time, this was late 90s, interest rates were like 8-9%. Okay. And we were getting ready to go into what people call the tech recession. The tech bubble had burst a year or two later, but we weren't there yet. Stock market had done good for a decade. Everybody was making money. And I did not want to be going to an office every day anymore. So I went out and bought two fourplexes at the same time. I did have some money saved up, so I didn't do any creative purchasing techniques then. I literally used some of my cash to put down the down payments, 20% down, and finance the other 80% on a pair of fourplexes. It was an elderly couple. They were retiring. They just want to get right out from the properties. And I just happened to show up at the right time. So in fact, the two properties I owned the longest were those two properties. I started making cash flow right away. In the next year, I acquired a total of 30 units, a mixture of duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes. And my net positive cash flow was equaling my net take-home pay from the bank. Now, bear in mind, I wasn't like a branch manager or anything. I was actually a corporate VP, whole different pay scale. We were doing pretty good. I had a 5 weeks vacation, the whole suite of medical, dental, and a 401k that was doing really well, right? In any case, it was a big deal for me to leave that job that I did when I was 40 years old. What I did after the first year, I'll get and wrap this for people. I used the cash that I had. I took an equity line out of my home, used that. Then I took out a personal line of credit called PLOC, just based on my reputation, for another big account I could draw against. And it allowed me to buy those 10 properties. And what I did in the next year, I didn't buy a single property, guys. All I did is I paid down those secondary mortgages, the lines of credit and so forth. I paid them all down to zero. At the same time, I fixed up the properties and raised the rents. So at the end of that year, I improved my equity position dramatically and also increased my cash flow position dramatically. But I still didn't leave my day job. I thought, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to buy more properties. And I did that. I built it up to 40 some odd units before I finally resigned August 13, 2003. Never forget, what led up was the Christmas before we had a major layoff at the company. And I was one of the guys that had to lay people off the week of Christmas. And I thought, this just confirms I am not doing what I'm meant to do. I'm not ruining these people's lives. Christmas time. Come on. So I told my boss at that point, I said, look, I'm just going to tell you right now, I'm going to be leaving. I don't know when, but what we did was wrong. I'm a good company man, so I did my job. But just so you know, I'm probably going to be leaving this year. It was just flat out ridiculous how you carried that out. So in any case, on August 13th, my rule was I wanted to have four active projects going on at once. Purchasing, remodeling, refinancing, renting out. It's various stages, four projects that go at the same time, plus, and I wanted the capital to have four projects going on at the same time with no debt. And I also wanted my income to meet or exceed my banker's income, plus all the benefits and everything. And I hit that point. But when I left, I got to tell you, this is kind of funny. I'm out at the street corner. This is up in Pittsburgh, USX Tower. And I'm waiting for the light to turn green for me to cross. I had a dolly with three or four boxes of my personal belongings. Now, it's August 13th. So I'm hot. I'm sweaty. My tie is undone. My sleeves are rolled up. And you can see I'm a little bit hot and sweaty. Well, these two guys were there wearing suits and saying, hell, man, we feel so bad for you. Is there anything we can do? Can we help you get your stuff to your car? You got an updated resume? And I said, what are you talking about? He said, they were like, you got caught off on another wave of these layoffs, didn't you? I said, no. I said, man, I just retired. And it occurred to me when the words came out of my mouth, I'm like, holy crap, I just bought my own freedom. And those two guys, the look on their faces, couldn't really, they didn't know what to say. I'm on cloud nine, walking to my car, pulling that dumb old dolly with my boxes and stuff. Looking back, it'll be 21 years this August since that happened. And it has been such a journey since then, guys. But I want to tell you this briefly. After I left the bank, I now had a lot more time available. So I started moving in the bigger properties, 5 units, 11 units, 19 units and eventually got a 90 unit building. And I'll pause here in a second too. What I did is I used the Burr method. So I would buy at a good price, a low price. It allowed me to remodel, gave me some value add room. So I remodeled to add value. Then I rented, right? BRRR, buy, remodel, rent, refinance. And that would output a brand new mortgage on that property and go out and do the next one. What happened is in that interim, was able to leverage the equity across my whole portfolio. I found a commercial lender who was also a private lender, and he gave me a loan at 11% that encumbered all the equity across my properties to allow me to go out and pay cash for the next bigger property. And that one move right there was one of the pivotal moments. So meeting Socrates and his dad was a pivotal moment. And what this guy did for me was also a pivotal moment because it allowed me to be completely independent. I didn't need the banks anymore. I used them, but I didn't need them. And that changes the whole landscape of borrowing. Now their lenders are calling me. I'm not calling them, right? In any case, fast forward, the real estate wasn't the end game. It was simply the foundation upon which I launched other businesses. So I want to speak to the engineers out there right now, the dentists, the IT guys. I mean, I'm an old IT guy. I'm telling you, you can do this on the side. And if you want to leave your day job, you can get to that point. You don't have to be as conservative as I was. You can probably do it in 18 months, you know, quite frankly. But what I did, guys, is I started building businesses related to real estate. I built a brokerage, a property management business, a title business, and an appraisal business. I never spent a dime on marketing because I already had the clients. I didn't have to pay money to go get new clients, right? And it was the same set of activities. Everybody that buys a property, investor property, needs property management. They need title insurance and they need appraisals, right? So I did that using my knowledge that I gained from banking. How can you serve a client multiple ways? It was a part of my DNA to do that. And because of my entrepreneurial zeal, if you want to call it, I didn't have any hesitation doing this. I didn't launch them all at the same time. It was a methodical process, one at a time, one led to the other. So at the end, what happened is the properties became the foundation upon which I launched these other businesses. And I'm going to pause here in a second. I want to tell you this real quick. If you follow Robert Kiyosaki, which I do recommend, I got to spend a day with him one time, paid a bunch of money. At dinner with him, and I showed him what I had done, and he said, you're following the cash flow quadrant perfectly. You were from E, employee, to S, being self-employed, to I, being investor, to B, being a business builder. And he said, it's the people that build businesses that go the furthest, the fastest, and make the most money. At the time, I couldn't conceive of that because I'm making money on my properties, and the businesses were still relatively new. But let me just tell you, he was absolutely right. And entrepreneurs, this works perfectly for us. Because we like to build things, we just don't like to manage them, right? There's ways you can address that we can go into later if you want. But let me pause here because I know I just gave you a whole lot there to unpack if you want to. So,
a lot to unpack there, Gary. I want to revisit something I think is very key to your story. A lot of people, interest rates are obviously on people's minds right now. And you got started in the 80s, interest rates were 10%. And then when you were, you know, doing it again in the 90s, late 90s, it was still 9%. And now we're sitting here at interest rates in the sevens, seven and a halfs, maybe eights. And it's a reminder to people that interest rates are not right now, they aren't really all that historically high compared to what they have been. And I'm curious, as somebody who sort of got into the real estate industry back when interest rates were historically low, Gary, how do you make money when interest rates are high?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. There's an inverse relationship between interest rates and prices. So as interest rates drop down, prices of real estate go up because people can afford more. They get locked into how much can I afford? They're like, wow, I could buy a lot more property. Well, you know what? Capitalists are pretty smart. They realize if people are capable of spending more, guess what? They're going to raise their prices more. The capitalists will. So the key here is this. I have people, and this discussion, guys, we have every week with our, you know, I run a team of, we call them investor agents. We're in 38 states. I teach them how to invest and work with investors. And this conversation comes up regularly. So what I tell people is this. If you're looking for the right time to buy, the right time to buy is yesterday, today, and tomorrow. If you ever find yourself saying, I'm going to wait and buy. I'm going to wait for rates to go down. I'm going to wait for prices to go down. You're missing valuable time and value opportunities, right? So our philosophy is don't wait and buy. Our philosophy is buy and wait. I promise you, real estate is always going to go up over time. Did it take a dip back in 2008 through 12? It sure did in most parts of the country. Did it bounce back? Well, the proof is in the pudding. Just look what happened the last 5 years. I mean, and I will tell you this, this is a hard lesson in life, guys, and I've learned it myself. I never regretted a single property I bought. There were some that took more elbow grease and a lot more gray hair to get figured out. But the ones I sold, I always regretted years later having sold them. When you own real estate, man, you keep it. Don't ever, ever sell real estate. Just leverage it. Borrow against it. Keep the real estate, for crying out loud. And it doesn't matter so much when you bought it because it's going to go up. I mean, my first house cost less than my last car. You know, that house in Virginia Beach, Virginia with Socrates cost us $63,000, right? Four-bedroom ranch. Now it's worth $600,000+. We should have held on to it. I'm telling you, just get in the game. And if you have to house hack like I did, was it Neil? You have to house hack? Is that right?
Both of us have.
If that's what you got to do to start, you just start where you are with what you have, who you know, and who you are. And you just start there. You got to be realistic. I know we all have visions and dreams, and I preach that. You've got to visualize. You got to dream. But you got to be realistic and start right now today with where you are and what you have. And if that means you got a house hack, then that's what you do. That first house, I bought it with Socrates. I only owned half the house. And it wasn't like I bought a house and rented out the other three rooms. I bought half a house and Sock and I technically each rented out a separate room. But it's launching pad. It's the beginning point. You got to start somewhere. Just start right now.
I think what's interesting is that even in that high interest rate environment, you're able to buy for cash flow, right? Specifically because you're looking, especially as you got into multifamily properties, you have a unit density mix that is a lot more easy to make cash flow than with single family homes. But you were able to do that in a high interest rate environment. So even though you're buying for cash flow, you place your income with your day job, exactly what you knew was going to happen did happen. It's that as the interest rates went down, first of all, you have forced appreciation. You were able to increase the value of the property, which creates equity that you can tap into. But on the backside of that, as the interest rates came down, the prices of the property go up. So even though you're still making cash flow, in fact, I would think that you probably refinanced to a lower interest rate or else did a cash out refinance and got more capital out. So the property's still cash flowing, but you've also had a huge personal net worth swing because as the interest rate comes down, the value of the property goes up. I think so many people are focused on cash flow, which especially as a young investor, you probably should be because that's what you have to replace your income. But appreciation in the market, sometimes because the value of properties are going up, sometimes because bad fiscal policy has made the value of the dollar go down, but either way, it's safe when it's locked into real estate. Appreciation has made more millionaires generationally than cash flow ever will. But you don't have to pick one or the other. You can pick a property that cash flows. I think that your point here, one of the many lessons that you talk about is make sure that you have a plan for recapitalization. Like if you have money sunken into these properties, you've got forced appreciation, you've got cash flow. But if you buy one of these properties, that's great, but it's not going to do much to change the financial velocity of the rest of your life and put you in a position where one day you've been retired for 21 years and you're able to share that journey with other people. That only comes by way of having a pathway to recapitalization through refinance or a personal line of credit or an equity line, so that you can take those dollars and put them to work. As long as you're able to take those dollars and put them to work and they're earning a return greater than the interest you're paying on that debt, it's still a step forward towards your net worth. One of the things that I find interesting is that you started a property management company. When you're clearly a visionary, you're an entrepreneur, and like myself, like I tend to have visions of grandeur and I'm surrounded by people in my life that are better operators than I am. Now, I'm also owner of a property management company. I have 14 Airbnb properties at the beach, and we started a property management company with partners who are better operators than I am to operate in that direction. But knowing what I know about you, you know, a lot of people think that real estate is the end game or replacing your income is the end game. You've moved on to that to now I'm going to build businesses off of this. I would guess, based upon the books that you've written, I'm reading the titles, there's eight of them, based upon the number of people that you coached, that you probably have a passion for giving and for helping other people achieve the same thing that you have. I think it's interesting that you started a property management business. So let me just ask you this. I know I need to land the plane here, but like you went from the goal being real estate to the goal being building businesses based upon your knowledge of real estate. What's the end game? you're giving me the opportunity. I'm 41 years old. I get to look at someone who's wildly more accomplished than I am in the real estate investing space, and you've taken it a step past real estate into businesses and into a pathway forward to coaching where you're helping a lot of people. What is your end game? And what do I need to look forward to that could potentially be the goal that I need to work for so that I can build backwards from there?
Yeah. What I'm going to tell you is probably not for everybody, but if you have what I call a servant's heart and you find yourself when you're working with people, clients, customers, and it's sort of a teaching mode, like you're finding yourself educating them. What I did is I started writing books. I didn't really write books to make money. I would love to make money writing books, but what I found out was it's a way for you to reach people on their own terms. They get to buy your book. They go home and read it on their own. Nobody's calling them, trying to sell them something, a training program or a coaching program. It's a way for them to get educated on a real personal level that's on their terms. The other thing too is now they got something they're going to keep. A business card they're going to throw away, but a book they're going to keep on a coffee table, on their bookshelf. They're going to share it with people. That's really what I started writing about. I'll tell you an interesting story. The first book I wrote was really called Investor Agent, Make More Money, Not More Work. And it was my passion to teach real estate agents how to work with us investors, because they didn't. Their brokers were not teaching them squat about investing. It was pathetic. That's why there was always a big disconnect there. So I thought, man, if I could just teach the agents how to walk the walk and talk the talk, and maybe they'll invest themselves, which is a really good thing. But more importantly, they can open up a whole new channel to their business. So I get this house on the Chesapeake Bay, a little town called Pocosin. It's near NASA, where I had my first job was at NASA, working on the space shuttle project. So I got to be familiar with the fishing and boating and just awesome, right on the water. I checked it out, rented for 3 months in the winter because nobody was renting that kind of place in the winter that far north. And I had a teacher. Her name was Demi Stevens. She's a great teacher to help you write books. I still use her today. I said, Demi, I got the house for 3 months. She said, well, you probably won't need it, but you're good. You got your privacy and all that. Guess how long it took me, guys, to write that first book? Just take a wild guess.
3 months.
2 years.
About 3 hours.
No way.
Okay. I was just like everybody. When I first was approached, I said, there's no way I've got time to write a book. There's no way. I'm so busy. You know, she showed me how to do the outline. And then all the content, your subconscious mind just dumps it when you have an outline to follow. That's exactly what happened. So I ended up writing 4 more books, the first 5 books I wrote that winter, and also did a whole lot of paddleboarding with my trusty old hound dog, Luke, out on Chesapeake Bay. So it was a heck of a time. But in any case, I started getting invited to teach in person, and I joined a brokerage that they said, you know, later on, they said, hey, we want you to teach us all of our offices. And I did for about 8 years. I was there traveling all over the U.S. and Canada. Got to teach just like a classroom setting and absolutely fell in love with it, man. I'm staying at Ritz-Carlton, eating, you know, scallops and lobster and T-bone steak, living the high life. Eventually, that kind of wears out. It's traveling is like that. It's hard on your body. It's hard on your life, too. You miss a lot. But what it did was it gave me the opportunity to learn how to teach. And so I started creating the training programs so I could give people content to follow that I would guide them personally. So if you're looking for the end game, like this is sort of my swan song. I thought what I was doing there was the final thing for me. I don't mind sharing. I was making over $1 million a year, you know, and living in Canada part-time, living in the States. But I realized my parents are getting older. My children were now adults, you know, and getting married and buying houses and stuff like that. But also all my old friends were all still in Virginia Beach, living in Milwaukee distance from each other, right on the water. And I'm missing all of that. So I said, enough's enough. I told my Beverly's my right-hand person. I said, we got to put this online because I've had a lot of fun, but I've also missed a lot. And I want to focus on my relationships and my experiences and help other people have those experiences. I've bought my freedom. I went from financially independent to financially free. I have no debt now. So what I did is I decided I'm going to build a team of these people that I taught all over the U.S. and Canada. We call it the Global Investor Agent Team. So it allows me to still teach. My sole purpose in life is teaching these guys and coaching them and leading them and guiding them into production so they, number one, develop extreme cash flow through commissions, and number two, cash flow from their own investment properties, right? Now, there's other streams of income we have going on there, but those are the two main things. This is really important. Most agents don't have any other stream of income. They're totally dependent on commission income, and a lot of them are freaking hungry right now, okay? if they would just simply open up, let themselves be taught how to invest, they could open up that line of their business. Then it doesn't matter what the economy does. It could be going up or down. Either way, they've always got people in the game of buying and selling properties. That is extremely vital. If you're an agent, listen to this, or you know an agent, listen to this, you need to tell them this and share this with them. But also allows me, guys, to be back more involved with the thrill of the hunt. I like finding the deals. I like negotiating and being strategic. I like structuring and creative purchasing techniques. So this allows me to do that on a much broader scale through these agents in 38 states. It's just the most amazing thing. And I wake up today just as excited as what we started. We started this 3 years ago. That's all. There's another thing about being an entrepreneur. You get better at building businesses. And the closer you get to your core passion and your mission, your values, your belief, your vision, the easier it's going to be to build that business. It just took me a while, piece by piece, putting the puzzle together. 20 years ago, I didn't know I was going to be doing this. That wasn't part of the vision. As the things evolved, I realized, you know what? This is what I was meant to be doing all along. I've hit everything cumulatively, came to this point in life. So this is my swan song. I mean, I know people will say, yeah, you'll probably do something else. Really, guys, I'm probably going to be a minister, quite frankly, is what's going to happen. And still be able to do my teaching and preaching, but that's the end game for me. Yeah.
So Gary, give me the high level sort of elevator pitch of the strategy that you teach.
Yep. First thing is this, we have a team motto and it's the right education with the right information plus the right action equals the right results. So I come from a family of educators, you know, we're no longer married, but my wife was a college professor. She had 4 degrees, right? Grandparents were teachers. It's just in my blood. So I knew from experience, from my own experience in investing in other things in life, building businesses, you always start with education. You don't ever, ever spend a dime until you've got the education. Then what's interesting, the education shows you how to get and use the right information, okay? And information is so much more available today than it was 20 years ago. Anybody could literally do anything these days. In any case, the right education plus right information builds confidence, which leads to the right action. Okay. And you put those two together, the equal sign is the right results. Now, having said that, I have a philosophy when it comes to building a real estate agent, building your real estate agency business or an investor building a portfolio. We all want to have the big giant campfire. Just think in terms of a campfire. We want the biggest campfire with big logs burning, right? But you don't start out that way. You start off with the little teeny little twigs and leaves and kindling and start a little bitty tiny flame. Then you add some more twigs to it, some more leaves, and maybe some small branches. That fire builds as you grow and learn personally. So ultimately, what I'm getting at is you want to learn small. So learn first, take what you learn. Don't go crazy and go get a 100-unit building. One of my colleagues did that. He bought a 94-unit building right out of the gate. Now he succeeded, and he's an exceptional person. Most of us, though, I recommend just get whatever you can get, single-family home, duplex, whatever it is. Don't spend all your money. Just get one property because you're going to have to learn. In spite of everything I can teach you, you're going to have to learn all the little nuances. It's just part of learning and growing. You have to learn from experience. Learn on a small scale so when you make mistakes, it doesn't hurt as much. Then once you learn those, you know, learn from your mistakes, then you buy the next property. By the time you get to the third or fifth or tenth property, you're going to have it down. You're going to have your routine down. You're going to have your own process down. Then you can grow big. And by the way, the money gets easier to come by. The lenders will start calling you. You will no longer have to call the lenders. When they see you're doing a good job, they're going to want to lend to you, especially when the market turns. See, bankers, they use 4 C's, sorry, cash, collateral, credit, and character. In the beginning, your credit score and your cash and all that kind of stuff is more important. Later on, when you have experience, what they care about is character. So here's what I'm getting at. Economy is going to go up. Economy is going to go down. What they want to know is, what did you do when the economy was down? Did you wave the white flag and give up? Did you jump overboard and swim to shore and leave the ship to its own? Or did you get that ship in the shore come hell or high water? The people that do that will always be able to get money. There's not a lender on the planet, when they look at a track record of you succeeding in an up and a down market, that will ever turn you away for a loan. Character is the most important thing over time. So learn small and engage with people. Do what Clint and Neil are doing. They got a podcast, guys. But you know what's beautiful about a podcast? They not only help you, the listener, they learn themselves. I mean, I have a podcast. I still learn today. I interview people almost daily. And I'm like, wow, I love learning, first of all. But engage with people. Go to events, network, join a local investor club. There's no way you can put a price tag on how important that is to network with people, become friends with people. You can do joint ventures. You can find partners. They'll give you a little tip that they learned that may help you solve a problem you've been struggling with for 3 months. That is one of the most important things I could ever teach you, is get involved with other people. You build friendships that way. I mean, I've probably got more friends out of the businesses than I ever got business from friends. I've had people invite me to their children's weddings. I've had people invite me to Vail, Colorado, skiing for a week, totally paid for, because I helped them flip a 15-unit building years ago. It's just a wonderful journey, very fulfilling too.
Well, Gary Wilson, this has been fantastic, and Clint and I have learned a lot, as we always do when we do these interviews. If any of our listeners want to reach out to you and find out more about what you're about and what you're doing, what would be the best way for them to do that?
The easiest thing is we have a couple of websites, but the one I want people to visit right now, because of where the economy is and what we believe is going to happen, go to globalinvestoragent.com. You can meet other agents in there who are already working with investors. If you're an agent, just communicate with them. Find out what it's all about. Come to Monday Night Live class. You can register for class there. If you're an art investor and say you're a dentist and you have no interest in getting your license, that's fine. Go there and pick an agent for you who's trained to work with you, you know? But I really do want to, any agent that's listening here or anybody as a friend that's an agent, I'm trying to scare people. I'm just telling you, the bubble is getting really big and showing signs of weakening. We don't know how big, wide, deep, or far this thing is going to go. It might not be much at all. But why take a chance? Just prepare. Don't panic, but prepare. By the way, Beverly, guys, what she'll do is if somebody leaves their name and number, she calls a screening, I call interviewing. She'll talk to them and set up an appointment with me. And we don't charge for that. Nobody pays me a dime for this stuff, by the way. Everything I'm telling you about, 100% total free, if you want to call it that. When you were asking about earlier, giving things away and what was the end game, being able to do this is an amazing feeling when people call 6 months later and say, thank you, tell you what you told me on page 38 in your sixth book is what I needed to hear and what I needed to learn. That's what fulfillment's all about.
Well, Gary, once again, this has been great, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Gary. Appreciate your time.
I'm glad to do it. I appreciate the opportunity to help, guys.
Absolutely. Look forward to staying in touch. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for listening and watching the Truly Passive Income podcast. If you liked the show, if you think it would be useful for someone else, the greatest compliment that you could give us would be to share the episode, leave a comment down below, or leave us an honest review. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to let us know down below. And remember, with truly passive income comes freedom of time, place, and the freedom to pursue your higher purpose.